Right, so welcome to the Now Spinning Magazine podcast with me, Phil Aston. And on this episode, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Luther Grosvenor, the legendary guitarist with Art, Spooky Tooth, Mott the Hoople, Widowmaker, and also some simply superb solo albums, and especially in more recent ones like Floodgates and Do You Dare. And there's a new album also being worked on at the moment. So welcome, Luther, and thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you. It's an absolute pleasure. You know, it's fantastic.
Now, your origins are from Evesham, aren't they? That was where your musical journey started.
I was born in Evesham. I was born in 1946. But in the local bands, I was only in one, a band called Linda Marsh and the Wavelengths. We did a tour of Germany. I think I was only about 16 or 17. You couldn't go if you were sort of 15. Now, our lead singer, Linda, she was fantastic. She couldn't go because she was underage. So we went out there, and our rhythm guitarist, who was also the leader of the band, he sung all the songs. And it was a bit of an eye-opener, Phil, because we were out there for about 3 weeks, a month. We played here, there, and everywhere in Germany. And we didn't know what to expect when we got there. And Jesus Christ, man, we were sharing rooms with about five of the bands.
Wow.
All in bunk beds. So it's just as well that Linda did. You know, she might have been the only woman there, and it wouldn't have worked.
No.
But it's a funny thing, that, because we did that tour of Germany, and we came back, and it broke everybody else. Everybody else said, sod this, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And, you know, they all just stayed playing in their local bands, and it didn't break me. It was hard work. I think I went out there with sort of more money than what I came back with, but it was a fantastic experience, you know, and I learned a lot from that.
Yeah.
But after that tour, very interesting part of my career, there was a the biggest band in Worcester, including Evesham, was a band called Hellion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, they had a couple of records out, and their guitar player, strangely enough, was Dave Mason.
Right.
Who ended up in Traffic. Now, yeah. Jim Capaldi lived just around the corner from me. He knew all my family. I knew his. And Dave Mason was to leave the Hellions. So Jim said, come down, have a play, and we'll see how we go. So I did that. And I got the job. But Jim Capaldi, he also of went with Traffic. So anyway, I joined the Deep Feeling. We called the name, called the band The Deep Feeling.
Yeah.
So we made one album called Pretty Colors with George O'Gamels, who was managing the Yardbirds at the time, because we played with them in Cheltenham Open Air Festival, and of course he was there, and he liked what we were doing. So he took us to the studio in London. I think that was about 64.
Wow, so you're just 19 years of age. Yeah.
So we recorded that album, and it came out on Sunbeam Records.
Yeah.
You know, many years ago. But Derek, that was another stepping stone for me. So anyway, a very good friend of ours at the time was Steve Winwood from Spencer Davis.
Yeah.
And he kept coming to see the band, and he'd pop into live recording sessions. And we didn't know, but Steve was poaching Jim for Traffic.
Of course, yeah.
So anyway, to cut a long story short, you know, we did that album, And of course, you know, it didn't light any fires, but it lit ours.
Yeah.
So anyway, Jim came to the band and he said, look, you know, it's difficult for me to say this, but I'm leaving the band. And we said, oh, are you going with Steve? And he said, I am, yeah. Steve wants to form a band called Traffic.
Yeah.
So I was in trouble. I wasn't quite sure which way to turn, like the other guys in the band. So Steve, being with Chris Blackwell at Iron Records,
yeah,
his girlfriend at the time, Penny Masso, mentioned to Steve that there was a job going with the VIPs.
Yeah.
All them. Island Records. So Steve and Penny did me a big favor because I joined the VIPs in 66 with,
yeah,
Keith Emerson was on keyboards at that time. And of course, the VIPs became Art and grew up into Spooky Tooth with the addition of Gary Wright,
yeah,
as everybody knows now.
Yeah.
That was a big start to my journey.
Because I just want to touch back on that, because that album by Art, you know, Supernatural Fairy Tale, that album actually almost, that gave the direction for Island Records, didn't it? It was such an influence on so many people.
Well, it's strange you say that, because the VIPs at the time, we were doing really well abroad, Germany, France.
Yeah.
And Chris Blackwell took us into his office at Basin Street, and he said, "Look, we need a change here. We need a change of direction." He said, "You know, the band are doing quite well over on the continent, but we need a change of name." So I don't know whether Chris came up with that name Art. I don't think any of the guys really liked it. I still don't. But we made Supernatural Fairy Tales with Guy Stevens, who went on to produce Mott the Hoople, funnily enough. So he did that album. And funny you say, ask me about this, though, because somebody phoned me up about 2 or 3 years ago from Liverpool, a big fan of Spooky Tooth and Widowmaker and whatever. And he said, Luther, he said, I've just been to a fair up in Liverpool. And he said, I saw Supernatural Fairy Tales, and it was going for 350 quid.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, so it's actually become a bit of a collector's item, you know. I've got it here, of course, and, you know, you don't write a book yourself and keep reading it. So I played it a few weeks back, and it's very interesting.
I think everybody in those days was looking for anything to do with psychedelic music or psychedelic. I was looking towards the USA. And this is like homegrown from the UK, isn't it? And I mean, there's some great Love Is Real. I think you redid when you reformed Spooky Tooth much later on. There's some great songs on the album.
Yeah, it's funny, really, because later when we did the Spooky 2 album, Greg left to form Humble Pie with Steve Marriott. And of course, Steve played on Supernatural Fairy Tales. He played Mellotron on the title track.
Oh, wow.
I think he played on another track as well. I can't remember which one it was. But there again, Steve and Greg, they got very chummy. And of course, Spooky Tooth was born. We did our first album, It's All About, which I really liked that. You know, it's quite lightweight to Spooky 2, which Well, a lot of people say that was one of the best LPs of its time.
I will be one of those people. But it's...
You know, months and months ago. And it's a fantastic album. I mean, maybe I shouldn't say that because I played the guitar on it. But you know, a lot of people from the States say that's a great album at that time. It deserves the recognition that it gets. And, you know, for me personally, I mean, Greg Kelly and Mike are dead now. Sonny, me and Gary that are still alive from the original lineup, which I think, you know, is the best lineup.
I mean, it's all about, as you say, but that was 1968. That's a great album. You've got Society's Child and Sunshine Help Me.
I love that album. There's some really beautiful things on there, quite melodic as well. And, you know, the change in Spooky 2. Obviously, I mean, I wrote a couple of songs on there with Gary, but Gary made the band. I mean, you know, a lot of people thought, ooh, there wasn't a bloody American in the band. We're an English band. But, you know, Gary coming in, he was the saviour. He made Spooky Tooth, whether people liked that or not. You know, it's sort of, he was the main songwriter. And he was a fantastic guy as well. He, you know, he was very funny, great sense of humour. So we did the Ceremony album after Spooky 2, which we did all the backing tracks.
Yeah,
Blackwell's idea.
Yeah, I'd like to just go back a little bit just for my own.
Yeah, of course.
Because Spooky 2, I first heard of Spooky Tooth, Luther, from being a slightly younger rock fan. I bought the Island samplers, you can all join in, and Nice Enough to Eat, you know, they were like 50p, and there was a couple of tracks on there by Spooky Tooth, and I thought, who are this band? And I love the vocals, I love the keyboard sound, and so it was Spooky Tooth that I tracked down first of all. And the reason why I just wanted to touch on it again is that it was produced by Jimmy Miller, and I think for 1969 it was such a fantastic sounding record. That kind of there's a little bit of echo on the snare drum on Waiting for the Wind as it comes in.
Well, I wrote that with Gary.
Brilliant.
That track, Waiting for the Wind, you know, we sat down in a room and came up with the riff, and Gary put the words and
it's just brilliant. But
yeah, you're right about the drum sound. You know, a lot of people, even now, say that's a really great intro, that one.
It is.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, I think being with Spooky Tooth was probably my finest time. I mean, we were together for about 4 or 5 years, I think it was.
Who are your influences on guitar? Because obviously that your centerpiece of that album for a guitar fan is Evil Woman. You know, you know, your guitar sound and everything about it. Who were you listening to back then?
Well, I guess I was listening to everybody like Peter Green, Clapton, early Clapton, mind. I went off of him after sort of a few years. Jeff Beck, of course. Never played a lot of Jimmy Page, although he was amazing. But I think when I record everything like I do today, I'm doing a new album. I mean, all my little influences are there, but I just feel as I play myself. You know, I've always believed that you know, why should I? I don't want to play like him or like him. They're amazing, of course they are. That goes without saying. But I think I've always played myself. You know, and influence is a combination of a mixture of things, and it applies to everybody. Clapton, Beck, Page, they're all influenced by whoever, you know.
You were on the same label as Free and with Paul Kossoff. I mean, did you ever kind of, did you bump into them?
Yeah, I knew them really well. I mean, I knew Paul very well. I used to go up to his flat in Portobello Road.
Yeah.
And, of course, we did a lot of gigs together, being on the same label.
Of course, yeah.
He was fucking one off. He was, yeah. One of Kossoff.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
He took the wrong road, didn't he? You know, yeah. He got himself into trouble with taking this and taking that, probably mixing up with the wrong crowd. But, you know, it's what happens, unfortunately. And I never took that road, to be honest. I mean, when I was younger in the 60s, of course I tried this, yeah. And tried a little bit of that. But I never took anything heavy. And neither did the guys in Spooky 2, Steeler's Wheel, Mott the Hoople were the cleanest band I've ever fucking played in. You know. Yeah.
But on that album, you've got Lost in My Dream, That Was Only Yesterday, Better By You, Better Than Me, which was covered by Judas Priest later in the 70s.
It was, yeah. I think there was a little bit of trouble over that in America.
Yeah, there was, yeah.
That song, and I can never work it out, really. But quite a few people have covered Evil Woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, Jimmy Coons, you know, singer in America, he's been around for a long time now. He sent me this cover version of this band. I can't, and it's almost identical note to note.
Wow.
Which is it what you do? I don't know. I mean, if I covered a song, I'd certainly want to do it a lot different. But, you know, when these things happen, which you will agree, it's not always, it's an amazing thrill, you know,
yeah.
that somebody sat down, hey, that's Spooky too, let's cover that track, you know, it's quite humbling, really.
Yeah, it's a classic album. As you say, it felt like that the band was on the cusp of literally making it into the big league. And as you were saying earlier, and then the next thing you did was Ceremony, which basically torpedoed all the chances of that. I mean, it's been talked about lots of times, but I've always wondered, because I remember buying a Spooky Tooth compilation album, and they'd very cleverly took a section of one of the tracks from that. I think it was called Prayer, I think. And it intrigued me. I thought, oh, that sounds good. And so I went and bought the album. And of course, it was not what I expected at all. And no. I always wondered, is there a version of that album somewhere, but without Pierre Henry's stuff?
Yeah, that's a question that's been asked a million times. I mean, you know, one could get the master tapes again and re-record Pierre Henry's music, take it off, because how that came about really was Pierre Henry. Now, Chris Blackwell organised this, you know, the boss of Island Records.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said this guy in Paris, Pierre Henry, was like a sort of big in France with all of his fucking sounds and so on. And Chris said he'd love to do an album with Spooky Tooth, Spooky Tooth playing all the back-end tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So another strange thing about that album, really, it's religious. There's a lot of religious words on there.
Yeah.
Gary wrote all those. So anyway, to cut a long story short, we did all the backing tracks, and they were fucking great, man, I tell you. So anyway, Chris had it sent off to Paris for Pierre Henry to destroy it.
Yeah.
And it came back, well, we all thought, fucking hell, what's going on here? You know, what the hell's going on? But it was out of our control then, you see, because it had been done and, you know, covers had been started. started. So it was a bit of a downer for the guys, really. Yeah. You know, it sort of that I think that made the feeling of the whole band, including Gary, sort of come to an end.
Yeah, because carry on.
So the band sort of was coming to the end of its road, and that's why we recorded The Last Puff.
Yeah.
And on that, you will recognise Chris Staines on there, Henry McCullough, only on a couple of things. But it was sort of what you might say, it was recorded for Mike Harrison, because Chris Blackwell, he loved the guys in Spooky Toots. He loved Mike Harrison. And, you know, it was really a feature for Mike to make his own way after the band had split up in 1970. So, you know, the album is really a splinter album. It's bits and pieces.
There's some good stuff on it. Isn't it? I Am the Walrus and The Wrong Time. I mean, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you can see where it says featuring Mike Harrison on the front cover that, you know, it was not the same as it was.
No, I mean, when we recorded Walrus and The Wrong Time, I thought they were fantastic. And
yeah, they
George
are.
Harrison from the Beatles, of course, he spoke to Blackwell, I think, and he said, that's one of the best covers I've heard of any song. So anyway, that was relayed to us. Of course, we were freaking sky high, and the band was about to split up. But, you know, it's one of those things. But to have a compliment like that from you know, one of the Beatles was...
Yeah, I can imagine.
Absolutely amazing.
And roughly around the same time, I think you were recording your first solo album, Under Open Skies.
I recorded that in 1971 with Iron Records. Chris Blackwell cut me on, which was fantastic, you know. And
how did that feel, being, because you're still really young and you've just been coming out of Spooky Tooth, and it's not that, doesn't seem that long ago that you were the in Evesham playing in, like, you know, here you are now with a solo album deal to do what you want. And I know you're on this, I just want to say to everyone listening, it's being reissued by Esoteric Recordings, and it's never sounded better.
They licensed that off of Universal Island Records. And, you know, Mark Powell, he owns Cherry Red, he phoned me up a few months ago and he said, Luther, we've decided to put your Under Open Skies out again with tracks featuring Chris Wood from Traffic, strangely enough.
Yeah.
And the story behind that is Chris sent me off to Spain in a place called Algeciras. He had a little villa there.
Yeah.
So I was mixing with all these fucking millionaires. No, seriously, and I was fucking potless. But I was different. See, I had long red hair and used to wear a long black coat. And of course, I was a musician.
Yeah.
And they sort of took me under their wing. But I think I was out there, Phil, for about a month. And of course, Mike Harrison came down, a few of the friends. But little does Chris Blackwell know that I actually wrote the album when I got back home. I did. Of course, I put a few things that was released in 1971, and you know, I produced it with a guy called Tony Platt,
yeah, who went on to become quite a name, didn't he?
He did. I mean, I was sort of learning about, you know, I produced it with them, and of course I learned a lot from Tony, and that came out in 1971, and the photograph was taken by my dear friend who did a lot of work for Island Record, Dickie Polak, photographer.
Was it taken in London, or I mean, the gatefold is you standing under a very large tree in a long white cape. Was that?
Yeah, it was. It was in Hampstead.
Oh, Hampstead Heath. Yeah.
Yeah, and people say, "Fucking hell, that front cover is amazing." You know, that picture, how I look back then.
Yeah.
And you know, it's. I'm glad that sort of Cherry Red have kept the same cover, really, with new documents inside.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the track "When I Met You," your guitar playing towards the end of that is absolutely sublime. It's fantastic guitar solo, and that song, of course, was reborn a few years later in Widowmaker, wasn't it?
Well, it was, because, you know, there again, it's sort of the story goes that after Spooky Tooth and after my solo album, Under Open Skies, I was still with Chris Blackwell.
Yeah.
And I had an offer to go to have a little rehearsal with Steeler's Wheel, because Jerry had just left, and I went down there, and they said, "Yeah, you got the job." So anyway, I joined Steeler's Wheel for about 18 months.
Oh, wow! Quite a while.
Sorry,
quite a while in those days to be in a band for 18 months. Is, you know, nowadays we might think, "Well, that's 5 minutes," but it wasn't really.
And Jerry came back, and I thought, "Oh, they're going to get rid of me now," but they kept me, and we recorded that song, "Everything's Going to Turn Out Fine."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which is quite good, really. We did that with Lieber and Stoller, that wrote "Hound Dog" for Elvis Presley. Yeah. So I think 18 months had arrived. Jerry left again, and of course, all the guys thought, "Oh, fucking hell." So it was like the end of Steeler's Wheel. So, you know, there again, I was in limbo, not knowing which way to turn. And this is no word of a lie. I'm sat in this flat in Hampstead. I was actually lodging there with a friend of mine, not knowing which way to turn. And Ian Hunter phoned me up from the States and said, "Look," Luther, he said, "we've looked at 3 or 4 guitar players." I said, "Why is that?" He said, "Well, Mick's leaving us in the middle of an American tour to form Bad Company." And I said, "Oh, right, you know." So he said, "Can I meet you if I come over?" And so anyway, we met at a pub in Hampstead, and it could have only been one thing, Phil, that he wanted.
Yeah.
And it couldn't have been anything else, without being blasé. And Ian, we got on a storm, and Ian said, "You know, we'll come over and rehearse." I said, "Look, you're doing a 2-hour set. How long have I got to rehearse?" And he said, "About 5 days. I said, "That's pushing it."
Yeah.
You know, that really is pushing it. But they came over, and it was okay. You know, I remember doing my first gig with the band in LA, the LA Palladium. And 5 minutes before we were going on, I said to Pete Watts and Ian, "Fucking hell, does this come here?" Because they were doing a medley of about 20 minutes. And of course, we got on stage, and it was fucking amazing. Were there any balls up? Of course there was.
But
nobody knew.
The other thing I need to mention at this stage for anybody new listening and doesn't know you that well is that not only did you join Mott the Hoople, but you changed your name. This is...
I did. I mean, the story about becoming Ariel Bender is sort of... it's been asked me a million times.
Because it was Mick Ralphs who was the Ariel Bender, but is it Ian Hunter that liked the name so much, he said, "Would you be Ariel Bender?"
How it came about, Mick was in the band. They were in Germany with Lindsay DePaul was on the same bill, and they had a bad gig. This is all coming from Ian, by the way.
Yeah.
They had a bad gig, and Mick, they all came out the out of the gig and walked down this road, and Mick was upset because of the gig, and he kept fucking bending all these aerials, and Ian said, "Fucking hell, you're going to be getting..."
Yeah.
Lindsay DePaul said to Ian, "What a great name, Aerial Bender." So anyway, when I met Ian in Hampstead, we had a couple of beers. I mean, I don't drink now. I haven't had a drink for about 9 years.
Yeah.
Ian said, "You've got a fantastic name, Luther James Grosvenor." I said, "Yeah, it's a good one." And he said, "There's only..." He said that he laughed, actually. He said, "There's only one problem. We'd like to call you Aerial Bender." And I said, "Well, call me Aerial." You know, I didn't care. And there's a lovely story, Phil. When we did that first gig in LA,
yeah,
it was difficult for me being called Aerial because people would call me Aerial and I'd look the other way.
Of course you would, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, Spooky Tooth had done 3 tours of America prior to that, back in 69 or whatever. Yeah, 69. And this guy came up to me that had seen Spooky Tooth 3 times in the States, and he said, "Fucking hell, Aerial." He said, "You're a dead ringer for that Luther Grosvenor from Spooky Tooth." I said, "Yeah, so they keep telling me. This guy went away scratching his head. He couldn't believe it."
Yeah, so, yeah, I can fully understand that.
At the time, we fucking pissed ourselves laughing.
Yeah.
It's a little story that I will always remember. Why, I don't know. It was really comical at the time.
Now, when you join Motley Hoople, you're a very flamboyant on stage character. Your stagecraft was in a way very different to what you would see as normal British rock star. You were very very flash.
It was, if you like, didn't wear platforms and didn't wear makeup and didn't wear fucking coloured fingernails and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And same with Steeler's Wheel. So anyway, when I joined the band, it was brand new for me, Phil. You know, all the stuff that I'd made for me to wear, and you know, honestly, I never wore a pair of fucking platform boots in my life, and the ones I did wear wasn't the ridiculous ones anyway. So it was a new thing for me, and becoming a different character, I was able to play that part. You know, I actually became Aerial Bender when we finished tour and came home. I was Luther Grosvenor catching a number 35 bus. You know, which was amazing. Really, it was being him. You know, you could only do that with a band like Motley Hoople, you know, and I don't think they were glam rock. I think they were more glamorous than glam rock.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I've watched some of the videos going way back to the 74 tour, and you look completely at home on that stage, and you use the whole stage, and see that, you know,
treat every gig as though it's your last one.
Yeah, I mean the live album, which fortunately was expanded into a 2-disc set not that long ago. I mean, there's some fantastic playing on there. I think I could have been on your own Facebook page about saying that medley is some of the greatest bit of rock and roll ever.
I've seen that a million times. I joined the band in 73. We were on tour with Queen over here. We took them on tour with us in the UK. And we took them on tour with us in the States. And 1973, I was actually finding my feet with the band. I mean, I found Aerial Bender really in 1974. You know, that's when I sort of felt comfortable with him being him, because, you know, in a way, this might sound crazy, but it's like playing a different character on stage, you know, in a play that you'd see in the West End. It's being another character, acting a part. you know. And do you know what, Phil? I loved it. I loved it. And you know, coming back in 2019, you know, we did that big tour of the States. None of us knew how the venues would, whether we get bums on.
Yeah.
Gig was completely sold out.
Wow.
And it was amazing. Yeah, every night it was sold out. We came back to the UK. We did the UK tour. And the same thing. It was absolutely, you know, you couldn't get a ticket. So we were supposed to go back to do the West Coast in 2020. Of course, Ian got tinnitus.
Yeah.
COVID came in. And it wrecked a lot of people's lives, as we all know now.
Yeah.
And it was a great pity, really, because, you know, as I say, we were booked up to go back. Of course, all that got cancelled, COVID. And I think even now people, it's still around here. It's still around in pockets in America.
Yeah. Do you think that, I know obviously Ian's just released a new album, Defiance Part 1.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that you'll work with Ian again or even Morgan?
What I will say, and Ian and I are very, very close people. He's probably one of my great friends. You know, I speak to Ian now and again.
Yeah.
And we've got a great thing for each other, you know, not like a woman that you're in love, but we have a great male love affair.
Yeah.
We, you know, we think an awful lot of each other. And Ian's album, to be honest, I've only heard part of the first one. And of course, he's got all these amazing players on there, which is fantastic. I think he did that during COVID. Downstairs. And of course, not the album I'm doing now. There's a few surprises on there, which I won't mention it's not finished. But some of the songs that I've written and put down sound fucking amazing, really. I'm absolutely thrilled, you know. I'm going in next Wednesday. I've done half the album now, you know. Those tracks are left now for final mix, and which is the critical part, you know. It's a very critical part of the album, as you will agree.
Getting
everything right, and you know, because you don't want to finish Noel Malvett pressed and think, fuck me, I wish I'd have done that.
No, absolutely not.
I think it's a normal thing. I think whatever you do in your life, you can always, I could have done that a little bit better, but it's too late now.
True.
It's
interesting you say that, because when you became Ariel Bender, that it must be like Alice Cooper being called Alice Cooper, or the guys from Kiss having separate names, that you became that character. But when you left Motley Hoo, Paul, you kept the name for your next main venture, which was Widowmaker. So you didn't...
I put that band together myself. I found all the people, and I thought, as a bit of clout, bit of extra clout for the album, to keep the name Ariel Bender. That's like in a business fashion, I guess, you know. That was a great band for me, because it allowed me to play different from the bands that I'd been in.
Yeah.
You know, with Motley Hoople, who I enjoyed immensely, it was a structured songs. You know, and with Widowmaker, I wrote a lot of that album, both of them, and it allowed me to play the blues on certain things and sort of do things that I couldn't do with the other bands, which, you know, I'm grateful for that.
I remember seeing you on the, I remember the Olga Whistle Test, and you did two songs. Yeah, you did On the Road and Ain't Telling You Nothing.
I've got all that at home, and I played it to myself the other day on headphones, and there's a couple of tracks we did on there. I can't remember what they are.
It's Ain't Telling You Nothing and On the Road. Yeah, I remember it really well.
It came over. Hughie's slide guitar was a lot too loud.
Yeah,
but it's just one of those things, you know. It wasn't when we were in there. Maybe it's where they had the mic set up to record that.
Yeah,
and I can't remember the other one, Phil. Now,
yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I remember there's some great, some really strong songs on there. And of course, you had Steve Ellis on vocals as well, who was also quite a name at the time, wasn't he?
Yeah, I went round to see Steve and put everything to him, you know, what I wanted to do and plan to look at. And I think he was in his own band called Ellis.
Yeah.
At that time, and anyway, I left his flat, and he wasn't really interested because he had Ellis going, which I thought, well, that's okay, you know, it's what it is. Anyway, I got back to Steve again, and he changed his mind and said, okay, let's look at it. I'd already got Paul Nichols, the drummer, and I'd already got Bob Daisley.
Yeah.
And I said to Steve, I said, look, I don't want a keyboard player. I've been in bands with keyboard players all my life. I want another guitar player. So he got Hugh Lloyd Langton down to have a jam with us.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, he was a fucking great player. He was. He's probably the best guitar player that I've played with in a band.
Yeah.
And we had a great understanding when we did the two albums. You know, as I said, I wrote a lot of the stuff on the first one and quite a lot of the stuff on the second one. And Hughie and I had this thing, I'd say to you, I suit you. And he said, okay. And Hughie would say to me, oh, this is definitely for you, Luther. So we had that understanding, you know.
Yeah.
Which you don't often get, you know, because so many people, they're on sort of ego trips. No, I'm doing that. No, I'm the guitar. I'm the lead guitarist. I'm doing that.
Yeah.
So we had a great understanding. And I think a lot of people have asked me, which album I prefer. Well, they're totally different.
They are very different, yeah.
The second one is, I'd probably go for that. It's a lot looser. You know, there's a lot more freedom in the production there. The first album was a lot tighter production, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
it does. So it was a great... I loved being in that band, you know, because it allowed me to play. I mean, a lot of people, and even Motley, said, why don't you play like you used to in Spooky Tooth? I said, because it's a different band, different way of playing.
You still had on the second album, you still used a track from your Under Open Skies album, didn't you? Here Comes the Queen.
Well, Ian, we were travelling somewhere at some time, and Ian said, that song that you recorded on your solo album, I said, yeah, which one? He said, Here Comes the Queen. He said, I'd love to do that on stage. And I said, really? I said, yeah, we'll do that. But he said, you've got to sing it. And I said, well, I wouldn't let you sing it anyway, because it's not your record, you know.
Yeah.
It would have been fucking strange to have sung it, although it would have been really nice, I guess.
Yeah.
So we did that. We did that a few times, more than a few times. I think that was in 1974. And it used to go down well, Phil, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah. I
mean, obviously, they all wanted to hear the big hits of Motley Hoople, but it was nice. It was nice that Ian came uh, came forward with that. And I said, yeah, I said, I'm thrilled to bits that you'd want to do it.
Yeah.
So that was Here Comes the Queen. We did that with Widowmaker as well. And Here Comes the Queen, we did it on the second one with John Butler on lead vocals. And I said to Bob Daisley, have you got a fretless bass to play on that? And he said, yeah. Have you noticed that there's a fretless bass on there?
It's good sound, yeah.
Yeah, it allows you to slide up and slide down. But you've got to play with a lot of precision with that.
Of course,
you probably know.
Yeah.
And, you know, that band split up after a couple of albums. And Bob, of course, went with Richie Blackmore, Gary Moore, and sort of so on. But you know, my career, it's still going. I'm still healthy. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I'm in a good place.
You moved away from the music business around that time at the end of the 70s.
I did. After Widowmaker, the reason why that band split up is quite, I before on different interviews, we were with Jet Records.
Yeah.
Don Arden, Sharon used to take care of us a lot. In fact, she used to come on the road with us now and again. And we, after our first album, Don Arden was a bit of a bad lad at the time, and he had Small Faces, Roy Wood, Yellow.
Magnum, yeah. Yeah.
And lots of things went missing, royalties and stuff like that. So I went in to see Don Arden, I think it was. Yeah, it must have been, yeah. And I said, look, you take care of us, we're doing well, and, we never have to ask for our wages. But I said, where's our royalties from the albums, if somebody owes me a tenner, Phil, can I...
Yeah.
This guy had fucking two mansions, one next to each other, Rolls Royce parked outside. So anyway, I went back a month later and said to him, look, same thing, we're all happy, we're taken care of, but you haven't sorted our royalties out. So he said, oh, yeah, we're actually doing it now. So I said, look, I'm coming back. And I said, if you haven't sorted it for us, I'm fucking splitting the band up because, we don't want to put up with this. There's three writers in this band, me, Steve, and Bob Daisley. And as I said to you, Phil, whatever you owe us, it might be very little, I don't know. But we want our money. So anyway, on the third meeting, I said, look, I've decided to fold the band. He said to me, if you do that, you'll never play in the UK ever again. I said, don't worry, I really don't want to. And that was why I sort of came away from, a bad deal.
Yeah, it sounds it.
And I thought, fuck it, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And I became quite a normal guy, which I think I've always been. Even my girlfriend, even now, she said, Jesus, used to go on these big tours, come home, and you're absolutely normal, gardening and, whatever. And she said, I don't know how you switch off. I said, well, it's easy for me, it's... I love being normal, Phil. I'm normal now, but I'm excited because I'm doing my own thing.
Yeah.
And I'm also financing it as well, and I don't have any sort of managers. I have a guy in New York that takes care of me.
Yeah.
But, the lovely thing is, you don't have anybody on the phone while you're in the studio. How are you getting on? How long is it going to be?
Yeah.
Oh, crap, time's running out, Luther. We've got to get this sorted. You know, I've actually never had that with my three albums that I put out. Yeah.
Because the next one you did was 1995, wasn't it? Which is Floodgates, following a collaboration.
I did that with Bob Law. He's a guy that I'm still in contact with very much now. In fact, I just spoke to him before I spoke to you. He's in New York.
It's and a brilliant album.
He phoned me up. Was it 97? Was it Phil?
95, I think. It was after your collaboration with Mike Kelly for the Peter Green tribute around that time.
Yeah, Bob said to me, he said, look, there's a couple of spaces on a tribute to Peter Green album. And I said, Christ, I haven't played for years.
Yeah.
Anyway, my wife at the time, obviously we're not together anymore, she said, the only fucking way you're going to get rid of him is to do the bloody thing. So what I did, I got my guitar up and running, got my fingers back, and I got Mike Kelly on drums, Steve Dolan on bass, who's dead now. Mick Dolan production used to do a lot of stuff with Steve and Traffic.
Yeah.
And I got Jess Roden on a couple of tracks on there. And a guy called Davey Moore on organ. He was awesome. He was, and we did the Floodgates album, and it's a great album.
It really is a great album. And again, as you say, the Dolan brothers, they used to be in a band called Hard Meat, I think, on Island Records.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. The lovely thing is, I used to go up to, because I had all the material together which I wanted to do, and I went up and rehearsed in one of Kelly's rooms, and we went through everything and got it all together, got the studio time, and we went in. I think we were in there for 12 days, and we did the whole thing in 12 days, mix everything, and Bob Law was actually there. He came over from New York, and he stayed with me. Funnily enough, we recorded that album just outside of Evesham.
Oh.
So anyway, on the way back, we fucking broke down. It was like it was snowing, everything. So anyway, we got the car sorted on the road by garage or whatever it was, got home, unpacked all my gear and got in our front room, and back then we had a bottle of champagne to celebrate the album had been finished.
Yeah.
And even Bob Law said, that's we got a great album there. And I said, yeah, it is. It's a great, I think it's my finest solo album.
Well, you've got there's songs like Best Years of Your Life, obviously the title track, Loneliest Man in the World, Evesham Boy. But my personal favourite, Luther, is a song called Kathy. Great guitar playing.
Guitar and keyboards.
Yeah.
Well, Davey Moore, at the end of the album, he said, Luther, he said, I've got this track that I recorded, but I recorded it on with mouth organ. So I said, yeah, let's have a listen. It was Kathy on harmonica. So we spent a couple of hours in the studio working that out. And of course, I got the sound on the guitar, and Dave got his sound. And we recorded that in two takes.
Wow.
Yeah, which, you know, was fantastic for me and him, because we captured that moment. You know, we captured that moment, and, you know, when it finished, we went into the control room and Mike played it back. Mike Dolan said, fucking listen to this. And me and Davey, we were blown away, you know. And Mick Dolan said, that's got to go on the album, because we didn't think of it going on pretty to that.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's it. It's a nice thing, you know. Davey played Amazed In, and you know, if I heard a guitar player playing that, I'd say, well, I'm going to say to you, that's fucking great. That is.
What was it like working with Jess Roden? He was from the Island family as well, wasn't he?
This is it, you see. In a way, it was like a family affair. You know, Jess, I bumped into him many times, and I phoned him up and I said, look, I got these two tracks, 1v3 and Fire Down Below, the only two covers that I'm doing. And I said, he came back and he said, yeah, I'd love to do them. So anyway, he walked into the studio with a fucking little briefcase with the words in it.
Yeah.
And he got them both straight off. He was amazing. No messing around, coming like a really old pro. And, you know, for me, it gave the album a lot of colour, you know?
Yeah.
And the album I'm actually doing now, I've written this blues track, which is turning out really good. And I've got probably one of the best singers in the Midlands to sing on that. It's a song that I could have done myself, but I actually wrote it for this guy. And I'm not going to say who he is until you know, everything's finished, because that's what I shouldn't be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... You know, that's absolutely fine. Your guitar sound on Floodgates is a wonderful guitar sound. Had you been listening to any guitarists during the period when you stopped at the late 70s to the mid 90s? Were you still listening to music yourself?
To be honest, when I packed in the old music game back in after Widowmaker in 76, 77, something like that. I was out of business. I didn't listen to anybody. And that's the truth. I didn't listen to anybody. I was quite glad to cut loose the music scene.
Yeah.
Until I had that phone call from Bob Lawl about the Peter Green tribute album. Yeah. I didn't want to do that. I said to Bob, I said, fuck me. I said, I haven't really played for such a long time now.
Yeah.
And of course I did that. And we were chuffed. Well, that's Jess Roden.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant.
Yes, again.
I mean, and so, then after this album, the next thing that happens is the Spooky Tooth reform. Is that right? About the end of 1999?
Yeah, we did. We did. Well, it was Spooky Tooth, but it was without Gary. We did the album of course, Cross yeah. Purpose.
Yeah.
Now, that wasn't on... wish it had been. That wasn't on the Island label, because it was recorded by a German guy called Thomas Roof.
Yeah.
R-U-F-F. And that to me, it's a great little album, I think.
Yes, yes.
And it never got a fair shot, I don't think.
No, I agree.
Possibly because it, you know, I think it had been a different story if it had been on Island Records.
Yeah.
But we were all fucking really proud of that. You know, we all came home and... we were delighted with it. There again, you know, this track's on there that Mike really wanted to do, and, you know, bluesy tracks and stuff like that, because, you know, I suppose, to be honest, you know, it was maybe the last shot that we'd ever do anything together.
Yeah.
There's a great track on there, Kiss It Better.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I played you that know, this morning, and, yeah.
And there's a great harmonica player on there. I can't remember his name now. But, you know, that's an album which is in my collection, obviously. And like a lot of things, Phil, it's a shame that it didn't get the exposure that it might have had if it had been on a bigger label rather than the little German one. But it's what it was, and you know, I haven't played it for a long time now. But if I did, there's a lot of nice things on there.
But you got the playing bug completely back by this time. But I think after Spooky Tooth, you resurrected the your name Aerial Bender, didn't you, for the Aerial Bender band in 2005-ish. So was there a reason why you took the name?
Really was, I got myself into a lot of trouble for that because it was a great little band. But the thing is, when we turned up at gigs, it used to say Aerial Bender's Motley Hoople. I said, it's not the band's Motley Hoople. We're only doing two Moth songs. I said, we're doing Spooky Tooth songs. We're doing Widowmaker songs. It's not all about Motley Hoople.
Yeah.
Of course, I had phone calls from him, Eminem, saying, oh, you can't call that Motley Hoople. I said, I'm not.
Yeah.
They are. I'm not, you know. So you know, there was a little bit of bad blood at that time, but it's all healed now. There's no problem at all. But, you know, I think we only did about six gigs. And Mark Eden was our lead singer. And he was brilliant. I thought he's with the Peckham Cowboys now.
Yeah, it's a great name. Yeah,
and we're still in touch. He's a good lad. He's a great lad. There again, one of these singers that should have been exposed.
Yeah,
it's great talent. You know, he's great talent. Like the guy that I'm using on my blues track. He should have been up there at one time, but he's quite happy to be where he is. Which is okay, I guess, you know. But, it's been a long journey for me.
But the thing is, I think that, because a lot of time when I talk to someone who's got your level of experience and you've got so many stories, a lot of people, especially rock fans who might be my age or slightly older, we always kind of drift back to the kind of what we see as the, you know, the big names and the big albums. But what I really want to put across as talking to you, Luther, today is that Floodgates is an essential album and I think stands up head and shoulders with anything else you've ever done in your career. But the other one, If You Dare, from 2012, I feel is even better.
I'll tell you a little story about I put that band together, the Aerial Bender band, which got into trouble by using the name Motley Hoople, which I didn't. So in that band was our keyboard player, Mickey Triggs. He was still with the Liverpool group. I can't remember their bloody name now. So anyway, Mike used to live about 2 miles from me in London. I was living in Streatham and he was living just a short trip away. So anyway, we recorded that album in my bedroom and we put two or three tracks down, which I think we did 10 tracks. I think I wrote about 9, I think it was.
Yeah.
And we started putting these tracks down and not even thinking about putting it out as a record.
Yeah.
Until we put about 5-6 tracks down. And I said to Mike, this is sounding really good. And he said, it is. Because we had some good gear in my bedroom, some Pro Tools, you know, Pro Tools.
I know, yeah.
So we did it all on that. Just me and him, Mike did all of the drum patterns, and I played bass on a couple of tracks, and I sung them all part. Now again, Mark Eden was on 2 tracks.
Yeah.
Kids They Drive You Crazy and another one. So that came about that we were just playing to keep our fingers in, keep in touch a little bit. No plan of getting a deal or whatever until we, as I say, we you know, like a lot of things, we thought this is fucking good. So we did sort of 10 tracks, I think it was, on there. I'm not quite sure. And we played it to Peter Pennell at Angel Air. He said, I love it.
Yeah.
We'll put it out. So that's what happened with that, really. Something came out of not even the thought of making an album.
Well, yeah, I mean, MS Song, is it, I think that's my favourite from that album. Great guitar playing on that.
Which one?
Off If You Dare, the song, is it Emmis? Emmis Song?
Emmis Song, yeah. That's my daughter's name.
Oh, it's a beautiful song.
We recorded that in my bedroom, and I said to Mike, I haven't got a clue what to call it. He said, call it after your daughter, Emmy. So that became Emmis Song. Yeah, there's some nice things on. I think there's some nice things throughout.
There is Tears Run Dry. Very Mott to me for some reason. And of course, Heroes, where you name check lots of people that you've known throughout the years.
Say that again, Phil. Sorry.
The track called Heroes, where you kind of talk about the different guitarists.
I mean, yeah, I sort of sat down. Mike had gone home, and I sat down and I just jotted down all my heroes, you know, Hank Marvin, yeah. Burt Whedon, who I grew up with in the mid-60s. Jeff Beck, Albert Collins, and B.B. King. And I wrote all these words, and I thought, heroes, call it heroes, you know.
Yeah.
I played the bass on that one. And we put a backing track down, and I sung all the words, and looked at each other. We said, yeah, fucking hell, it deserves to go on.
Yeah, it's good.
And there's a nice line on that. Heroes don't die, just like me and you, we fade away. Which really is what happens, you know, we fade away. But the music, see, all the music that I've been on, about 40 albums, I think, they'll live on, Phil, when
they
I'm
will.
Gone.
They will. Well, I like to think that you're not fading away yet, Luther, because you've obviously got.
I'm raring to go.
Because obviously, after this album, you zoomed back into the limelight when it was Mott 1974, wasn't it? You were, you know, back with Morgan Fisher and Ian Hunter on the same stage.
Yeah. We've gone through the story of that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's absolutely right.
But that was big fantastic. But now, what I'd like to finish on is your new album. The fact that you're starting to work on a new album. You've already got some tracks done. What was the motivation? Did you feel it was time to do a new album?
Well, it's like when I was with Mott the Hoople during the end of 74. I'd already got a bunch of songs together, which were more in the bag. Difficult to write for Ian. Ian would be the first to say it's difficult for people to write for me. And I had this bunch of songs. Anyway, Mott the Hoople came to an end for me. Of course, I had to start with the material, you see.
Yeah.
We can all get a band together. You say, well, what are we going to play? I said, I don't know. You know, so I had a really good start with the material anyway, which gave us a bit of a kickstart, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's like what I'm doing now is very much the same. I'm going in next Wednesday. I know what I'm doing. And that's the way I'm working. You know, we can all go in the studio and look at each other and say, well, what we do and which track we do and how does it go? I mean, that's no good, you know, especially when I'm paying for the whole thing myself, you know.
Yeah.
I don't go in the studio and look at the clock every fucking 2 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
It's nothing like that. So the control for me is a little bit of pressure, but the thing is, the album I'm recording, I've done half now. I'm absolutely thrilled. I'm over the moon, and there's a lot of things on there that people might say that's very different from what what we think of Lucifer from Spooky and Widowmaker and all the other bands. Of course it is, because it allows me to show people that I'm different from what they know. This is my album. This is what I'm capable of doing. This is another side of me.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there's a lot of things on there which people say, fucking hell, didn't know Luther was writing in terms of something like that. It's there's some really heavy duty songs on here, Phil, but there's a lot of beauty as well. And if you listen to the albums that I solo, just a lot of melodic content.
Yes, there is, yeah.
And that's where I am. I'm a melody man. Even my heavy tracks have got a certain amount of melody there as well. You know, I've never been into sort of crash bang heavy metal, that sort of thing.
No, I agree. All your albums have got like parts where they're very reflective, they're very emotive. And you talk through the guitar as well as you talk through your voice. So, you know, it's, you know, all of them.
Somebody said to me, I did an interview a couple of weeks ago, and somebody said something about whatever it was. And I said, look, the songs that I'm recording are more important than me. So what he couldn't understand what I was saying. He said, what I do for songs I've written, I play for that song. I play for what I feel, what sort of guitar it needs. I mean, on my one big track, which has got some great players on it, I play a nylon guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful tone. And I've had this old beat-up classical nylon for a long time, and I picked it up and I thought, yes, this will go on that track. You know, this will go on that track beautifully. So I took it in and it worked fantastic. So the song is more important than me, Phil. I'm put on what I think it needs. And of course, you know, at the end of the day, you cannot please everybody. But I think when you release an album that you've done yourself, you've got to, that it's bang on to go out there.
Will this album be coming out on Angel Air, or is it coming out on
your own? No. I'm not telling you yet.
Okay.
No, I know where it's coming out, but I'm not going to say too much about that. That's until right. It's all signed and, you know, on the dotted line.
Will it be available on CD or on vinyl or both?
I've checked all that out. More than likely CD. I'll tell you for why, because it's very, very expensive today to put stuff out on vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, if you're a big shot, big name, you can do that. But I think that there probably will be maybe 100 made.
Yeah.
But going for the CD now.
Yeah.
You know, for the minute, and I mean, if I can, the bank's broken anyway. But it's all going well, Phil. It's all I can't really wait to get into it next week. I'm doing a fantastic track.
Fantastic.
And I've been going through it this morning with my little tape recorder.
Yeah.
And it's a big, big track, heavy duty, big fucking guitar sound.
Great stuff. So, what guitar do you play now? Is it?
I got a Dan Electro.
Yeah.
An old one. I got my old green Stratocaster. I've got a big jumbo acoustic Face.
Yeah.
And my nylon acoustic, the classical one.
Yeah.
You can't play guitar with a pick. It don't work.
Yeah.
you've got to use your fingers. So I haven't used a pick anyway for the last 10, 15 years. I played with the pick on some of my recordings, but it's, I found it quite weird at the beginning because I've used to playing with my fingers, yeah. You know. And I don't know, I think playing with your fingers, you have that feeling that you're in the string.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Rather than sort of itching it with the pick, you know, if that, probably a lot of people think, what the fuck are you on about? But, that's where I am, Phil. I'm in a very good place with myself. And watch out for...
Yeah. Do you have a website that people can visit, or where's the best place to get hold of your information?
I'm old fashioned. I'm stuck in the '60s and the '70s. It's like when you said to me, "Get onto Zoom," I thought, "Fucking hell, I ain't got a clue what you're on about."
Well, I know that. Well, I know that for those of you listening, that. Lisa can be found on Facebook, and I'll add the link to the website so people can find you, so they can see what you're doing.
Can you send me a copy?
Of course I will. I'll send you a copy to the link to this, but I'll also make sure that people can find out what you're up to with the new music.
That would be fantastic if you can do that.
I can.
You know, it helps bump along the new album.
Yeah, so, I mean, and it's also, again, for those of you listening, that Luther's original solo album, Under Open Skies, as I say, has only just come out on Esoteric Recordings, and it sounds absolutely fantastic. It comes with two bonus tracks, Heavy Day and All the People, different versions.
Well, I've had some great comments made about that. I mean, I do know that it'll sell a certain amount. But, you know, it's never going to light up the world, but it lights mine.
Well, the thing is, it lights up it lights up people's hearts who love that. And I know, actually, for you to hear this, Luther, is that a lot of my subscribers love that album. And in fact, two people told me this morning when they knew I was doing this interview, saying, "Oh, you must tell him that how much the Art album means to me."
Brilliant! That's fantastic.
Must tell him how much Spooky Tooth means to me, or how much I remember seeing. But the other thing I wanted to say finally is, is Floodgates. A lot of people are really. You've got a lot of fans who love that album as well. All of your albums still touch people. In fact, Widowmaker as well. Someone said to me the other week how much they loved the first one out of those two, you know, without even going near Motley Hoople.
Yeah, toss it between the two Widowmaker albums. I mean, I love them both, you know, because I've lived with them both.
Of course,
but
yes,
I think
of course.
I lean to the second one. You know, to be honest, I love the songs on there. I love the production with Chris Kimsey, that was.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and also I remember at the time it came out with a gatefold sleeve as well, so I think that was why I remember it more. Because it was quite rare to have a gatefold sleeve back then. But yeah, it was very good. Well, thank you so much, Luther, for all of your time today. It's been fantastic talking to you.
One thing I will say, all these guys and girls that love all these albums, go and tell them to buy my new one.
Oh, absolutely.
Spend that money.
Yeah, so what I'll make sure is, I mean, but this will come out soon, is that obviously I shall be watching your Facebook page like a hawk. So as soon as I know what it's called, let me know, Luther, what it's called and any dates, and I shall make sure I tell everybody.
Well, I know what it's called, but I'm not going to tell you at the minute because you know as well as I do. Things can change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And once you've told someone, you feel like you can't change it then, so don't worry.
Well, but... Exactly, yeah, exactly. Anyway, have you got enough, Phil?
I've got enough now, thank you. But thanks, Luther. Thank you for your time, because I know I've taken up quite a lot of it. But
thanks to all the guys and
thank
girls
you.
Out there that
That's
have
right.
supported the albums that I've been on. I'm very grateful.
Okay. Well, take care, Luther, and hopefully I'll talk to you again in the future. So good luck with the album.
Thanks a lot, Phil. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you. Goodbye.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
So thank you very much for my guest, Luther Grosvenor, and we're really looking forward to hearing about his new album, and I'll let you know on the Now Spinning Magazine website as soon as I know what the title is and have a release date. So thank you very much for listening and tuning in. Please check out the website at nowspinning.co.uk, and I look forward to seeing you and talking to you on my next episode.